Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I'm sorry, you can sit there and look and play with all your silly machines as much as you like.
Is Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say! Brilliant!
And tame again.
Crank up the music! Charge your glass! This nation is going to dance all night!
Can you lash a header? Can you be among the goals if you're responsible for all of those goals? Can you be among the assists? Did Endrick really meet the lighting up Stadium X threshold at Wembley? Can you dent a build-up? Stuart Pearce's left-backs guild. Which player has their prime cited the most? The extinction of the word goalposts. And from nuisance to nemesis. Ranking and rating the words for how much of a pain in the arse an individual player can be. Brought to your ears by Goalhanger Podcasts. This is Football Clichés. Hello everyone and welcome to Football Clichés. I'm Adam Hurry, this is the Adjudication Panel, and on that panel, first of all, Charlie Eccleshare, hello.
Hello.
How you doing?
Yeah, very well, thanks.
Alongside you, David Walker, how are things?
Yeah, things are good. Good to have you back from your US expedition.
Your exploits.
The wonders of technology meant I was barely away, but I am back. Cobbled together. This isn't a cobbling, this is a good episode. I don't feel like it doesn't deserve a cobbling, but I did get it together. In the space of a couple of hours.
Just hours after you've landed.
Seething at being left on the tarmac at Heathrow, knowing I had a listenership to serve. But yeah, let's do it. That's the past. This is the present. And we kick off the adjudication panel. Are we still in the international break, are we? It's not over yet.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, we're in the midst. Okay, we're in its midst. Okay, let's midst, because this first one came from James Fielden. And this is Christian Romero heading home for Argentina against El Salvador.
Romero able to find a way through several bodies. Lash the header towards goal.
Huge sense of deja vu here, Dave. I feel like I've asked you this question before once or twice in my whole life, but can you lash a header?
Of course not.
I'm sure we've done this, Charlie.
I don't think we've done lash. I think we've...
Yeah, we've done scuff.
Yeah, done a lot of variations on headers, but I don't think we've done lash a header.
The reason why I think it rings a bell, Charlie, is because my point would have been, and it remains, is that you just can't get your neck to do enough for a lashing, because the lashing is defined in shooting terms by... You know, a real backlift, a real swing of the boot and a vicious follow through. And you can't do any of those things with a header, really.
Mm. So you're imagining it the kind of the lashing action as if you were actually lashing someone. Yeah.
Only Stretch Armstrong, I reckon, could lash a header. I mean, if you were to even get close to lashing a header, Dave, it would need to be really changing the direction of the ball and really going for it, like cartoonishly, like throwing your head at the ball.
Like Andy Carroll scored one for England in Euro 2012.
Against Sweden, yeah.
Even then, he was just sort of helping it on its way.
Yeah.
Yeah, you need to, I don't know, even say Hullet in the 88 Euros final where he puts his head through it. That's just a straight header. So, no, I'm not for a lashing. And then this didn't even work in this case either. Right, elsewhere in the international break, Charlie, Sam Jacques writes in, says England's Twitter post about the under-21s being 2-0 up at halftime against Azerbaijan claimed that both Harvey Elliott and Noni Madueke were amongst the goals. Can they be amongst the goals if those are the only goals currently scored? Surely they are simply the goal scorers.
Agreed. I mean,
Yeah. I mean, it's both literally a disgrace and also in footballese.
Also, just go with among. Amongst is such like a whilst instead of while. Just so unnecessary.
Also true.
Yeah, I mean, have we spoken about the thresholds for among the goals, like when you would use them?
I'm tempted to say that it should just be, as long as it's fewer than the number of actual goals, you're probably all right.
No, sure. But like who you pick out as do it, you know, why and why you might pick out certain players, like player X and player Y were among the goals.
Slightly sort of narrative significance, maybe debutants or maybe unlikely goal scorers. Pretty much everybody counts, that's the thing.
Or I guess if a club feed might do it, saying two of our blues were among the goals for England in their 7-0 win over San Marino or something.
Yeah, I was thinking maybe you could see like a BBC Sport sort of write-up of a notable foreign team like Brazil in an international, or even like a Barcelona or Real Madrid in La Liga, and they might pick out the two stars. They don't want to get too granular into the detail.
Yeah, Premier League players as well, yeah.
And they might say, yeah, Neymar and Mbappe were among the goal scorers for PSG as they thrashed whoever 5-0.
Yeah. I think it's a fairly open thing. I think we can all agree. If that's the sum total of the goal scorers, he can't use among the. Equally, this came from James Dillon. Don't like this at all. This is from Liverpool's Twitter account, doing a little roundup of their players on international duty. And they tweeted, Szoboszlai netted a winner for Hungary, while Gakpo and Diaz were among the assists for the Netherlands and Colombia during Friday's international fixtures. Don't like among the assists, Charlie. It's a creeping significance of assists.
I was going to say, yeah, hot on the heels of assist sheet. This has been such a development in the language of football over the last year or so. Assists and their growing importance.
But also it's a bit weird that they have gone for like assists as in the total of amount of assists across the international break in all the games. The Netherlands didn't play Colombia.
No. So among all the assists.
Yeah. What other assists are they referring to?
Yeah, I don't like it. I don't like it at all. That's really annoying, actually. It's just not significant enough to be among it. Just say that they set up some goals or more elegant than that.
Both registered assists.
Yeah.
How bothered are you, Adam, by the missing respectively after Colombia? Always a sticking point for some people.
Respectively, I find is a little bit...
A little bit smug?
Is it smug or is it just... It just feels a bit robotic. Like, it's not necessarily required. I don't think... If you removed it from 90% of cases where it's used...
No one's
going
to be confused here.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's true. It's a box-ticking
exercise. Both
things
at the same time? Wow. No. Yeah, respectively, there is an element of smugness about it. Ooh, I'm being clever here. I'm pointing things out. But yeah, it's essentially obsolete. Now, this... I didn't watch... England versus Brazil, Dave. I didn't watch the highlights because I don't watch highlights of England friendlies because it's not pathological. But my impression of just absorbing information from afar at a glance, this felt like a classic England being given a wake-up call in a friendly somewhere in the lead-up to a tournament kind of game against a fairly big nation.
So I didn't watch the game either, but I was at a wedding.
So was I.
Bloody hell.
It was in a pub, so it was like a... quite a casual affair, and we had like
I designed my night for Dave Walker.
we had like the sort of back of the pub reserved, and then the rest of the pub was still in full flow. I kind of popped through periodically just to keep an eye on the score or whatever, and I sort of lost interest in it, but then came back and saw that we were last minute, we were losing 1-0, and there were a group of lads watching it, and I did some classic, how's it been? We've been all right? Have we played? And
that's
kind
such
of
an England friendly thing to say as well.
Anyone impressed? Anyone been good?
Anyone impressed? Anyone shone? Has anyone shone?
Who fired and who flopped in this game?
Can I just have your ratings out of 10 for each player? That's all right, lads.
It does make me think, Charlie, I think I would rather not watch an England friendly or watch it in its entirety than dip in and out of it at a do. It's such a shit way to consume an England friendly because it's like, oh God, I don't care about this and I care about it even less. Now I'm dipping in and out of it.
But it's enough that it's going to distract me. And I really resent the fact that it's distracting me because I don't actually care. I had a good one of those recently. You know, we've talked about how any football in the pub is enough to distract you. I was at the pub recently, it was on a stag do, and we were playing beer pong, and right in front of our eye line was, you know, that game of the day thing that they do, where it's basically like almost a full rerun. And it was Crystal Palace against Luton, I think it was, a game and it- no one had any interest in, and yet you just can't help it. You're watching it, you're talking about it, it's suddenly like permeates into the evening.
That's
like,
a great example.
We don't care.
Yeah, that is a great example, Dave, because you hate yourself.
And it's like
even
a full rerun.
It's not
like it's live.
Yeah.
We all know how this game finished, and we didn't care when we found out the result.
But I'll tell you, in between bouts of small talk, it really does sort of pad things out. So I've got something to look at casually, and good goal there. What finish? Oh.
Eze's good, isn't he?
Yeah.
I think he'll go in the summer. I think he might, you know.
Good old footy. Love footy. Always will. Right. Speaking of England versus Brazil, listener Sam gets in touch and says the headline in The Guardian was Endrick lights up Wembley. Is playing 15 minutes and scoring an open goal tap-in enough to light up a match / stadium? I know he's a potential superstar arriving on the big stage, but for me, lights up is specific to piece of play. Well, interesting final point there, Charlie. So it has to be a sort of a whole act of performance on the pitch rather than merely a game defining contribution.
I think it's far broader than that. I think it's become just a shorthand for this player made a big positive impression for one reason or another, and that could be a whole they controlled the game from start to finish, or it could just be they made the only real significant contribution in an otherwise forgettable game.
So just to clarify, you're okay with lights up for a single goal in a 50-minute cameo?
I mean, it's definitely pushing it.
Yeah.
But if it is a player that there is loads of excitement about and it kind of feels like his coming out moment, I think it's just about acceptable.
I mean, this is the perfect breeding ground for slightly tenuous use of lights up, Dave. A single goal scorer in an England friendly and a player who's clearly on his way to stardom. It's the pushing of the narrative, isn't it? I hate to use narrative here, but it was a ready-made situation that's thinking, oh, yeah, that's enough, we'll use it, go for it.
Yeah, and I think Wembley is particularly well-suited to being lit up as well.
Yeah.
Because of its sort of stature. If this game was at St James's Park, they're playing a friendly at St James's Park, I think, in the summer, I don't think you would have a lights-up St James's Park and it just wouldn't be used.
What time did the game kick off, by the way?
It was an evening game. It was like six.
It was in the dark.
So it must have been not bad.
I knew it was Ron, and I thought I'd... Anyway, I might have done this before, Charlie, but can you light up a game in the daytime? You can't, can you?
That's a good question. I don't know.
I don't think you can.
I mean, you shouldn't be able to. Whether it's been done, but it's not like you need it here. I mean, there are actual lights doing that job.
Yeah,
it's not,
I know.
It's not played in darkness.
I feel like subconsciously there is a rule that you can't light up a game in the day. I'm convinced of that. I mean, games at night are framed as more exciting anyway, so that probably lends itself to it. But yeah, Endrick, you've got away with that one. Onwards and upwards for you. Elsewhere, The Observer, their headline was Brazil starlet Endrick scores only goal to dent England's Euro 2024 build-up. Ian writes in, Dave, and says, I know a bad result often dents a title bid or dents hopes of staying up, but can it dent a build-up? Seems a bit dramatic for a friendly. Can you dent a build-up?
And this far out as well. Yeah. We've still got...
all right with it. I'm all right with that aspect of it. I think we're in the lead-up to it.
Yeah, as we discussed last week, I think we are.
It's the lead-up, but not the build-up.
Well, all of a sudden, Euro 2024 is in the consciousness. We're talking about the plane and the squad and all that stuff. So I get it. But yeah, denting the build-up... I don't think it's enough of a tangible thing to be dented.
No. Shattered.
What about
leaving a build-up in tatters?
could a team's build-up be dented by injuries?
Blighted?
Yeah. Derailed? Something. I mean...
Yeah. It's the progress of it rather than the structural integrity of the thing itself. Like, your hopes can be dented because they don't go anywhere. The hopes exist and then they are there to be dented. But a build-up can't be dented because a build-up's neither a good thing or a bad thing. It's just a thing that happens. Can't dent a season.
To
really.
Mar? Could you mar?
No.
No.
I don't think you can mar.
I think an individual game could be. But
a game could be marred.
An individual friendly, I mean, like, you know.
Yeah. Marring and overshadowing, very subtly different things, I think. Wins are overshadowed. All other games are marred.
Undermined?
I think. Undermined. that would be the flag for Rory. That undermined the build-up. Yeah, let's not get into that. All right, elsewhere on England duty, William Paul writes in, Charlie, and says, half an hour into the England game, presumably on Talk Sport, Stuart Pearce criticised a Ben Chilwell shot as a member of the left back's guild. The guilds work differently to unions. Unions are there to defend together, but guilds are meetings of artisans. And do we expect high standards of them? Never heard of a guild before.
A guild, that's a great Pearceism. Never conventional with this language.
And I think it's, I quite like it. I don't think you two are eligible for membership, but I believe the New York Times, their union is a guild. So I think it can be used in the same way as a union. There are guilds out there that do the same thing.
It suggests a little bit more of a specialism as well, I think, like, you know, a real trade.
Yes.
Rather than a union, which I think could be lots of different sub-trades, I think, altogether, working for a common cause. Whereas guilds look after them in a very specific field, I think. So, Charlie, I quite like guild. I think guild should be promoted in its usage. Although it's a bit it's shady. It's a bit Freemasons-y as well at the same time, though, isn't it?
Maybe. It does conjure up such a nice image of Stuart Pearce sort of being the leader of this guild and getting them all together. And it's kind of just, you know, let's just talk freely about, you know, what it's like being a left back and all the challenges that it poses.
Yeah, just it's something a little bit more homely about it, I think, than a union.
Well, less sort of militant than
definitely. Than just going about their business quietly. Good. It's not always about confrontation as a union. Right, some inevitable international break backlash, part of the custom of this part of the year, Dave. Danny P gets in touch and says, why do international friendlies count towards records and stats? For example, Endrick is the youngest scorer at Wembley. Why do caps and goals, why are they added to totals? And yet domestic friendlies don't count for anything in the record books. I mean, I don't think he's blowing apart a massive conspiracy here. There's probably a lot of reasons for this, but which one's going to move first in this horrible dichotomy? I imagine domestic friendlies are going to start becoming a bit more of a thing. You've already seen sort of debut goal for new signing, first goal in X colours, that sort of thing. It's creeping that way.
I think the sort of line is pre-season. You don't really have friendlies during a season. And true. International matches, although they're friendlies, I suppose they're kind of akin to like a test match in another sport, aren't they? They sort of do have a bit more of a significance because of what they are.
Yeah, they've got an inbuilt function, haven't they, friendlies? Because many people are accused, Charlie, of reading too much into a friendly, but there's nothing else to do with an England friendly. Like, you can't treat it as a complete friendly, can you? So, they're always going to have that inbuilt superiority to domestic friendlies.
Yeah, the pedigree, the heritage. Has the Community Shield always counted? Like, I know it does now, but that
well,
feels
only if
like
you lose, mate. Only if you lose.
That was like a little bit of a grey area, but that is counted towards players' goals and assists, indeed, totals nowadays.
Yeah,
I don't
know
if it always has been. I guess it has, but it seems a bit odd.
Yeah, that feels acceptable to me as well, even though there's no extra time. I think it's all right. On the other hand, Danny Scott writes in, it's perhaps a petty point. It's not. But Viaplay had the Road to Germany watermark on their YouTube highlight packages for this weekend's friendlies. Is a friendly on the road to a tournament? Don't like that.
This is what we were just talking about before when we were talking about the build-up and stuff. I think it kind of feels like we are just setting off on the road to it, but it's...
On the road is sacred. On the road to Wembley. On the road to host X of tournament Y. It's qualifying. It's progressing too. I won't have it. Doesn't need to be the road to X.
Well, what are we on then?
Also, the other team that you're playing might not be qualified for the tournament. They're not on the fucking road, are they? You're just passing them by. Oh, thanks very much. You've helped me along the way. They're like the people passing out water at the Tour de France.
Little pit stops.
Don't abuse on the road.
I'm not such a fundamentalist about it. I think it's all part of the planning and...
Right.
And maybe it speaks to the fact as well now that qualifying campaigns often feel like such formalities in a way they didn't before. Like they from an England perspective anyway, and maybe it was just because we were more engaged, but they were such big things, you know, like qualifying for the 98 World Cup and that sort of thing. Whereas most of them now, you can't really remember them. They don't feel like hugely tense affairs anyway. So I don't know, it's kind of all just part of this kind of slow meandering road to the tournament.
You're fair always enough on the road to somewhere in international football, I suppose.
Right, let's get into some competitive action then. Wales thrashing Finland in their Euro 2024 playoff semi-final. And this came from Mark Dunn. An incredible caveat to an old classic as Nico Williams doubles Wales' lead over Finland with a well-worked set-piece goal.
Something that they thought about on the training ground. Just to go and shift that ball just about a yard or so. You saw where the three players were. They've gone and moved. They've got away from it. There's no chance the goalkeeper in the world would be saving that unless he was actually physically standing there.
That really, really tarnishes the superlatives of it, Charlie. It's amazing. It's absolutely amazing.
That's so good. Unless, of course, he was there, then he probably would.
It would have taken two goalkeepers to stop that, unless, of course, they merged their DNA in the womb and only became one man and then stood there.
Or just
there
a really well-positioned one.
Really good. I don't understand what the point of it is, Dave. Why bother? You ruined it.
Yeah. Yeah, he has undermined it a touch there.
Someone might write in. Someone's going to write in and correct you because you never know. Someone, you know, a well-positioned goalkeeper would have saved it.
There was another little wrinkle that I noticed at the start of the clip when they said something they've thought about on the training ground.
All right.
So not necessarily practice, but they've just thought about it, which I don't think I've ever heard used before.
Mm-hmm. I think I got some messages at the time, Charlie, about whether this counts as a free kick goal or a set piece goal. It definitely does, doesn't it? Any free kick that's laid off and then scored from is a free kick goal, as far as I'm concerned, because it's part of the routine.
Harry Kane scored a very similar one to this at the back end of last season, having always been awful at free kicks. It was always this big thing, and then it caused this big thing. I'm like, does that count? Does that end nearly a decade without a free kick goal? Is it not? I mean, I think, yeah, when it's just a layoff. I don't know. I can't remember if Opta count those or not.
I'm happy to set aside Opta's definition here because I think spiritually it's okay, isn't it? Because it's something you would have had to work on it together on the training ground. You're part of the routine.
It's a set piece still.
It's a dead ball pretty much.
Yeah, if you score from a corner, you score from a corner, haven't you? So yeah, shouldn't be any different. Right then, back to regular matters. It's time for footballers' names in things. This came from Chelmo Bakker. He says, this is genuinely my favourite ever footballers' names in things. Fair enough. It made me stop still in the middle of the street when I heard it. Not in the road, I hope. Anyway, it's from the Hat Chat podcast by YouTubers Hat Films, explaining the plot of 1996 horror comedy and Warwick Davis vehicle, Leprechaun 4, in space.
The ship's commander, the cyborg, Dr. Mittenhand, explains his plans to use Zarina's regenerative DNA to recreate his own body, which was mutilated in a failed experiment.
What
Who wrote
hell?
This? I can tell you, it was Dennis Pratt.
What I like about it is that it's a middling, well, now championship player. Only 11 appearances for Leicester this season. So, yeah, it's nicely obscure, but it couldn't be anybody else. That's good. And we have to just assume it's pronounced Pratt as well, Charlie.
Yeah, I love with these, as if we're doing For My Sins Corner and I'm like waiting to guess it. As if there's any way in hell how are you going to guess that's... Oh, yeah, I knew it was Dennis Pratt. Of course it was Dennis Pratt.
That's the joy of these. Just coming amazing. Out of nowhere. It's great. You'd never have guessed Dennis Pratt in a million years. If you had to guess, who did you think it was going to be?
I didn't really have anyone in mind. I was just like listening attentively as if it was going to help to do that.
Dave, someone else sent me one in from an old BBC sitcom. I can't remember what the name it was. And the name in question was Charlie Taylor. You can't have that one. You can't have Charlie Taylor. There is a threshold here, which I'll never specify, but people need to meet it.
On the subject of footballers' names and things, though, it has kind of the umpteenth example of this podcast seeping into my daily life. My girlfriend has started watching a lot of these trashy American procedural shows like NCIS and kind of all the, you know, Law and Order, all those sorts of things that pop up. I don't sort of sit there and watch it with her, but there has been moments where she's had it on and I'll just wait for 5 minutes just in case I hear something pop. I'm waiting for them to say a name of something just to see whether anything pops up.
I'd never forgive myself if I didn't listen for the next 5 minutes.
That's the thing, yeah, because I can't really ask her. See, if there's a, can you just write down every name that ever comes up, just in case?
Well, we've learned to expect them in crime serials as well.
So, yeah.
Yeah, you're always on the edge of your seat now. Anyway, that's the end of part one of the adjudication panel. We'll be back very shortly. Welcome back to Football Clichés. This is the adjudication panel. And before we get into some correspondence about some recent discussions, let's kick off with this. Stephen Kirkwood I love this. With Sky resorting to showing eFootball this weekend, the three-person panel, seriously, talked up one of the contestants by saying, and he's only 19, like he was Jude Bellingham. Surely playing FIFA is exempt from the he's only X conversation. If anything, Charlie, it should be like, people forget, he's 84.
Yeah. This guy's 57. No, he's still going.
A young head on old shoulders.
Got to think about the demographics here.
He's probably old.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's quite old. That's a lot of time spent playing computer games. I think it's fine. Wow. Bang on, Stephen Kirkwood. This is a nice little callback to something we spoke about recently, so from Michael Shepherd. He says, last week, Dave referred to a prime Fernando Torres when discussing players' ability to score chances. Is he the most prime player ever? Maybe a prime Michael Owen could match him in being the most prime player ever. Charlie, first of all, what kind of precipitates primeness? Is it kind of a career being slightly overshadowed and then you have to pinpoint the moment where they were at the peak of their powers in case you missed it?
I've thought about this before, actually, in relation to both Torres and Owen. I think they're really interesting in that both of them, it's not that their peak was necessarily especially long or short, it's just that it came really early in their career. They basically were really good from about 18 to 26. Mm-hmm. And 8 years is like a perfectly fine standard amount. It's just normally that would be sort of like 22 to 30 or something. Where they're so unusual is that it came so early. And because of that, them falling away was so pronounced. Because normally if a player just stopped being so good at like 31, 32, you'd be like, okay, well, that's just a normal trajectory. With those two, it was so striking because it was like, they're only like 27, 28. And yet they're so far from where they were. They were both also, they were very quick when they were younger, then lost it. So I think when there's like a physical diminishment as well, it really lends itself well because those two were so explosive and exciting and then fell over the hill. I mean, Rooney was probably similar peak years, something like 18 to 26.
I think Rooney, the difference with someone like Rooney is that, yeah, he obviously had that amazing sort of early explosion and he was just so dynamic a player, but he did manage to adapt throughout his whole career. Obviously had sort of a couple of years at the end where he was sort of bumming around at Derby and whatever, but at the top level he still managed to keep going and reinventing himself in a way, whereas Torres and Owen, they had such a notable drop off. I mean, Owen's was obviously more really to do with injury, I suppose. Torres's maybe was a bit, but not as obviously about injury. Yeah. And they didn't ever really recapture their form, and they were just a shadow of their former selves. I would put Robbie Fowler maybe in this bracket as well.
Yeah.
Maybe Brazilian Ronaldo.
Yeah,
perhaps as well.
Yeah, Fowler, definitely.
You'd never hear prime Messi, would you?
No.
And whilst
it's too long a prime.
Well, exactly. I mean, whilst it's easily explained according to your logic, I still feel like it's something that somebody would say, like, you look like prime Messi out there. Like, just to throw it in casually as a bit of a sort of a jocular thing after Sunday League or something. No one would say prime Messi, and I don't think it's just for that reason. I don't know. It just doesn't feel right. Prime Ronaldo?
Cristiano.
Yeah.
But I think, again, with Messi Ronaldo, there's not an agreement necessarily on when their prime was. Like, some would say, you know, for me, I love Ronaldo when he was doing the step overs and was really exciting at United. I was be like, I loved him when he was just scoring like 50 goals and was a complete machine. Messi as well. There are so many different peaks his career.
You don't hear prime Shearer.
Again, too consistent over a long period of time, I think.
You're going to get annoyed at this now, aren't you? Who else has no prime? Never had
prime Shearer.
Prime Jimmy Greaves, have you? No, too long. Too long.
But, I'm trying to think of another one like that. But yeah, those two, particularly Torres and Owen, are perfect.
Excellent. Good question, Michael Shepherd. Enjoyed that one. Dave getting a battering now. Jack says, on last Tuesday's pod, Dave described a goalkeeper as making a last-ditch save. Surely every save is last-ditch, and only a tackle or block can actually be described as such. Some fellow listeners waded in on your behalf, Dave. Mungo Blurry says, maybe it's a relative thing. I can picture a goalkeeper having let the ball squeeze past him, scrambling back to beat it off the line. Lorne Malvo then says, nah, you can't describe a weak effort that dribbles into the keeper's arms as last ditch. Can see the point you're making, though, in that it's all or nothing.
Well, to defend myself, this passage of play, as discussed, was a goal mouth scramble and the ball was pinging around the box. And in that instance, it's kind of, although there's making the save of their hands, it's more similar to like a last-ditch block in a way. He kind of threw himself across the goal and just got a hand to it as the ball was sort of pinging around in the maelstrom.
Extra desperation.
Yeah.
Okay. Clawing it back away from the goal rather than stopping it getting there in the first place.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's feels quite last-ditchy. I mean, in my head, Charlie, it was kind of, I don't know, a goalkeeper racing back to their line and clawing it back off the line to stop it going in. That feels like extra layer of last-ditch. I feel like a goalkeeper's last-ditch bar is obviously higher, and Dave's logic sort of supports that too.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it has to be relative, doesn't it? Because, yeah, it has to be very extreme. I mean, like that Gregory Coupe, that thing that's always shown.
Ultimate.
That last save is pretty as close to last ditch, I think, as you're going to get.
Yeah, well, there you go, Jack. You come at the literal king. And you best be prepared for at least two people appearing in your replies telling you otherwise. Right, some more callbacks. This is from Thursday's MHD, I think. Greg says, the follow-up to the casual fans input. I love this. My mum sends a photo of the Radio Times entry whenever my team are on Sky. I'm ashamed to say that each time I get a pang of annoyance that she doesn't think I already know, as if it challenges my fan credentials. It's lovely and sweet, and I'm 44. That is a touch of the Radio Times. I can't even remember the last time I opened a copy of the Radio Times, Charlie, but classy touch.
Yeah, that's really nice. I can see where Greg's coming from as well. That's like, I do know when the games are.
One day there just might be the chance that you're just not across a fixture change or something and you go, we're actually playing on Saturday.
What a lovely surprise.
Yeah, there have been a few 3:30s and 3:45s, haven't they, on Sundays recently?
Yeah.
I wonder what team he supports, because it sort of implies it might not be Premier League, to give her a little bit of credit here.
Could be Leeds.
Maybe. Gary Weaver on comms. The closest I get to this, Charlie, and I'm very wary of this particular strand of discussion turning into my missus. The things my missus done when a football's on. But if I mention that my team are playing, she'll say, is it on normal telly? Is it on normal telly? I don't know why it's such a big deal. And I'm like, no, it's not. It's on fucking Sky Go, so I'm going to be a minute behind. Unless it's the FA Cup, it might be on normal telly. And then she goes, oh, there you go.
That brief COVID period where there was one game shown live on BBC.
Yeah, I should remember that one, just in case COVID happens again. Yeah.
Yeah.
Some vague broadcaster agreement. So, statistically, she's about 20% right. Here's a little twist for in and around now, Dave. Matt Jones says, I work in digital marketing, doesn't say for my sins, and was researching what people search for on Google and came across this beauty. It turns out there are 3,600 searches a year from people saying things to do in and around me. Can you imagine Googling that?
That can't be right.
What a ridiculous thing to clarify.
No, I mean, 3,600 is actually a drop in the ocean, I suppose, in terms of the total amount of search traffic that goes through Google. But things nice to know that there are people out there doing it. Yeah.
I mean, Google must think, Charlie, like, how close a radius are we talking? Like within 6 meters?
I'm very suspicious of this. Or that Google's doing the autofilling in and having a laugh at our expense.
Well, you know, there's a lot of Andy Townsend searches there.
Yeah, that's the thing. Cause you know, sometimes the engineers at Google, and they'll add like little Easter eggs, and they can have like playful things. I think there's like a thing, if you put, I saw it on Twitter the other day. If you type in, it's not acute, but it's something like acute. All the results are like Google like makes everything at an angle. Some sort of silly little flourish like that. So if there are any people out there happen to be working for Google or Alphabet, just get in there and say, the next time someone searches for things to do in and around me, just get an Andy Townsend picture up at the top of the page or something.
Or maybe they do it on like Andy Townsend's birthday. If you search things around me, it just adds in the in and for
it. That's what we need, Andy Townsend Easter eggs.
Wouldn't put it past them. Wouldn't put it past the search engine aces. Right, interesting one from Roger Hunt. Charlie says, please can you clarify the situation? Up to last season, when a forward was through and only had the keeper to beat, it would be described as a one-on-one. Now it's a one-on-one situation. Similarly, it's now a two-on-two situation, a free kick situation, an offside situation, etc. Do we think situation is growing as a concept? I'm not convinced this is a sort of a latter development to me. I feel like this has always been a thing.
Yeah, I don't know how much that's a new thing. I mean, a couple of theories. One is that it is just in the mould of almost like, of, you know, saying football club. It's just trying to sound a bit more kind of official and serious, and I don't know, or whether it's a refereeing thing as well. Do they talk in
maybe
in those terms?
Yeah,
is
they
that
do.
Like a VAR thing that, like, well, let's look at this situation, this situation. I don't know.
Situation has so many uses in football. When you obviously you have a situation at a club, an ongoing drama, but mid-game situations. I guess it's interchangeable with scenario, right? A set-piece scenario. Are you a scenario or a situation man?
I quite like scenario, I think.
One-on-one scenario, though. Is it too dramatic? Yeah. I don't know.
Let me give you a scenario. It's too hypothetical, isn't it? Maybe. Situation's good. Situation's handy. Right, next one comes from Ali. He says, I read a quote from Sadiq Khan earlier saying he wasn't going to move the goalposts on ULEZ. The only other time you say goalpost in full, not just post, I think, is jumpers for goalposts. Is this a fossil word? A fossil word, Charlie, is a word that is essentially obsolete but only lives on in idioms and sayings. Mm. So that's all that keeps it alive. I'm not convinced goalpost is completely like that. I mean, you would use it like he does his best work in between those goalposts, in between, in those...
Yeah, though I think you'd often say just in between the posts.
Are we okay. Mm.
What about like when you actually, in Sunday League, you actually have to physically move... I mean, you don't really actually have to do that. You just move the nets, don't you?
Sometimes you'd have those big ones on a 4G pitch with the wheels.
Real luxury, isn't it?
You know you're onto something.
Would you ever say, like, but you just talk about them as goals.
Give us a hand with the goalposts. Nah.
Just the posts.
Very much implies they're separate.
Now, let's do this. Do we use the word goalpost or goalposts in any other way than saying moving the goalposts figuratively? Or jumpers for goalposts.
I really can't. I'm really struggling.
Collided with the goalpost? Maybe.
No, I just think you see. Just post. I don't think you would.
It's just post. Collided with the post.
It's just post, isn't it? And I think the opposite is true. You wouldn't hear Sadiq Khan saying, "I'm not going to move the posts on you, Les."
Mm.
Wouldn't sound right.
Yeah.
Jumpers for posts.
Yeah. Jumpers for posts.
I think Ali might be right. Interesting.
Great spot.
And now, at this point, I really wanted to say, and speaking of fossils, it's time for Keys and Grey Corner, but they didn't bother turning up for work on BeIn for international break. And Keyes' blog this Monday was really... I'm not going to say it's phoned in. It was still very strident, but it was very international breaky, wasn't it, Charlie?
Yeah, there were some nice flourishes. Him sort of taking credit for saying Xabi Alonso was a good manager. He sort of claiming he called that before anyone, and then doing his imagined criticism he got off the back of that in quote marks.
Only one paragraph that starts with "look." I did like this bit talking about potential replacements for Eric Ten Hag. Deschamps, yes. Zidane, yes. I was laughed out of court at the back end of last year. When were you in court, Keezy? Would go and watch. I'd be in the gallery for that one.
Yeah, here it is. My critic said, no, what's he done? It's too soon.
Not guilty. Right. Final item for the adjudication panel came from Paul Milligan. This is great. I love when we do a little bit of a scale of things. And he says, can you rate a player's level of threat to a team? And he's given us some options. Nuisance, pest, thorn in the side, nemesis. I feel a player can maybe have a hoodoo over a club and can also haunt them, but I'm not sure on that. Would you include haunting in this oeuvre, Charlie?
But that tends to be haunting against a former club that he's come back to haunt them.
Yeah.
So I think that's slightly different. That I don't know if you'd use that just generally.
I think it's still an individual threat of a player to a team, so I think it should be...
No, it is, but wouldn't that be just for a former player? Would you say that? Like, I don't think you said, oh, Harry Kane's haunted Arsenal again. Then that would sound a bit weird.
No, you're probably right. I was going to say, if he kept scoring
against
them...
Although he is former, I guess he technically is. Yeah. For the pedants out there.
That's true.
You know what I mean.
Yeah. We're missing a good one here, Dave, amongst these very good options, which is Tormentor-in-Chief. Mm. I love Tormentor-in-Chief. I think it's really, really cool. Hyphenated, by the way, for all the budding writers out there. Tormentor-in-Chief is class. What does a Tormentor-in-Chief do, Dave, specifically?
Well, I think it has to span a certain length of time.
How long?
I would say, almost across a sort of a defined sort of era.
So really?
Because I think to achieve that status, you've got to do it enough. You've got to be consistently tormenting them, I think, over a long period of time. Like,
I thought he was going to say, like, it's got to be over like at least an hour.
No,
it's a single game thing. Charlie, isn't it? Tormentor-in-Chief.
No, I don't think it is.
I think it is more of a... Ooh. Yeah, they're Tormentor-in-Chief. Like, I'm thinking like Drogba against Arsenal or something.
Yeah, or like Mourinho to Benitez or something. Like, it could be a rivalry and one person is the other's Tormentor-in-Chief across their career.
I do think it can be both. I'll be honest.
You might be able to say, well, and today he's been their Tormentor-in-Chief.
If you run a team or slash an opponent ragged,
You have been their tormentor-in-chief. A very tormentor-in-chiefy player, regardless of how we define it, Charlie. I'd say Jack Grealish is very tormentor-in-chief. I think it's
he's
more,
relentless.
Yeah, I think it's more dribbling and creativity rather than goal-scoring. I don't think mid-game tormentor-in-chiefing is about goals. I think it's about tormenting a defence. But I do accept it is, across games, Drogba, for example, against Arsenal, is a great tormentor-in-chief. So I think there's a double-barreled usage going on here. Goals across games, just general mischief mid-game.
Yeah, I think it bleeds into nemesis as well, doesn't it? The nemesis also has a lifespan to it.
I think a lot of these, that because Drogba as well, not only did he score a lot, he did feel like a bully. He was like literally like shoving defenders over and barging them to the ground and just way too strong, feels quite like bully behaviour.
So you'd accept Drogba as Arsenal's nemesis, would you, Charlie?
Yeah, I would, yeah.
What's the threshold for nemesis? I feel like you've got to have substantial body of work against the same club in the same era as well. The same opponents being tormented over and over again.
That definitely needs prolonged period of time.
Half a dozen goals.
Their nemesis. Yeah, I'm trying to think of other ones, but he definitely fits into that.
He just loves scoring against this lot. That's nemesis. Okay, let's deal with three of these very closely bunched terms, Dave. Nuisance, pest, thorn in the side. Which is the worst? Which is the most threatening? Nuisance, pest, or thorn in the side? It's like a quiz, this.
I think thorn in the side is sort of closer to what we've just been discussing as well.
Yeah,
you might say
agreed.
Harry Kane was a constant thorn in the side.
Thorn in the side.
Whoever it is, he's got a great record of scoring against.
Leicester.
Good to clarify that it's still stuck in there and it hasn't been removed.
Thorn in Leicester's side again. Harry Kane.
I've got a one to throw into the mix on, which is similar to nuisance and pest. I actually used it in real life yesterday when awarding one of our players in our final Sunday League match of the season, awarding him man of the match.
Let us guess what it is, because if it's mainstream, it sounds like an oversight here in the list.
I described it as man of the match honours go to,
was it constant before one of these
X,
words
a constant
yes
dot dot
yeah.
dot menace correct.
Wow, menace. Yeah, I like menace.
Always with constant before it.
Constant menace.
I mean, because I think with nuisance, you would, that's more almost like be a nuisance, like just be a pain. Like when the
Neil
defenders
Mopay
have got the ball, be a nuisance, be a pest.
It's not that threatening, is it? It's annoying, but it doesn't carry with it a level of threat that someone actually like scoring loads of goals would.
Yes, agreed. Yeah, it's essentially beavering away after the ball. Paul Dickov was a pest.
Yeah, so pesty.
Mopay's a nuisance.
Love I feel this. Like Jamie Vardy could be a lot of these things.
Yeah, he's the full package because he probably, he must have had a period of scoring goals against the same club as well.
Well, he was another one who Arsenal, he was a bit of a thorn in their side / nemesis for a while.
And he's a nuisance and a pest.
Exactly, so if he's not scoring, he's a nuisance and a pest. And if he is, then he gets upgraded to one of the others.
When he first sort of got to Leicester and was first in the Premier League, he wasn't banging in 30 goals a season straight away, was he?
Hmm.
But he was, so in those early days, when he wasn't scoring loads, he probably was described as a pest or a nuisance, and then went on to become a nemesis or a thorn in the side or a menace.
The dream for any pest or nuisance. Yeah. One day you could be a thorn in the side. Keep pesting away, and you'll get there.
I think Vardy just about would have managed tormentor-in-chief as well, because, you know, mid-game or across games, he's going to...
No, he would, because he just keeps going.
Yeah.
He would just keep...
And
like,
winds up the fans as well, which I think is part of tormenting as well. They booed their tormentor-in-chief. There you go, Jamie Vardy, the full package of individual threats to teams. Brilliant stuff. Right, great adjudication panelling. Really enjoyed that one. Thanks to you, Charlie.
Thank you.
Thanks to you, Dave Walker.
Thank you.
And thanks to everyone for listening. We'll be back on Thursday with the 11th edition of the Football Clichés Quiz. See you then.